Good afternoon. Today we wanted to continue our analysis of some exams that have been assigned in the past, and in particular we focus our attention on the text given on May 5th, 2009. In particular, I wanted to highlight to your attention an exercise that frequently happens in the exams every time with a particular aspect, a particular issue that is modified, but whose general structure is always the same. That is the measurement of frequency that characterizes a signal made off by a pulse train with a frequency that can sweeps from 5 MHz up to 80 MHz, and considering that the measurement of the frequency must be done with a microprocessor with 16 bits data bus. The requirements are: first of all, describe the measurement technique that has been chosen so as to minimize the uncertainty range that affects the frequency measurement in the worst case. Suppose that the interrupt service latency is more or less around 1 nanosecond, of course, considering those techniques that eventually include the presence of an interrupt. Second, verify that the constraint required by the chosen technique are satisfied. And third, determine the maximum and minimum frequencies really measurable with the constraint that have been set. To answer the questions that the exam makes to us, we must go to the slides 63, 64, 65 and more of the section devoted to digital interface. And in particular, let's consider the three techniques foreseeing that a certain number of pulses is counted in a time interval. Let's consider, for example, the so-called hardware interrupt technique, into which the pulses are counted by a counter that provides the measurement, the estimation of the measurement to the port of a microprocessor, and the time limits, let's say, the time borders, we could say, are evaluated by a timer that is connected with the main interrupt line of the microprocessor. As we said during the lessons, this is not the usual approach that is adopted by the engineers, because typically the output of a timer is connected with the bit of a PIO port and not on the main line that is fixed by hardware, therefore cannot be modified on the basis of the needs of a certain design instead of another. But in any case, following what we have in the slide, the number of the bits that characterize the port of the microprocessor, the data bus of the microprocessor that are used in such a kind of project of design, are those provided by the counter. Therefore, we must consider one of the constraints of that technique that said that the product between the maximum frequency measurable with this approach, time, the duration of the interval of the measurement must be less or equal than the maximum capability of the counter, that is 2 power n. Doing this, we obtain that the maximum possible measurement interval is 2 power 16, that is the maximum number of the bits that the micro can provide, divided by the maximum frequency, that is 80 MHz. And this will give us a measurement interval equal to more or less 0.8 milliseconds. Conversely, we know that the slowest phenomenon that we can measure with such a technique is the one that provides one count in the duration interval, in the measurement time. That is, the minimum frequency must be at least equal or greater than 1 divided by delta t. And therefore, this is the other, let's say, limit of the measurement, the other constraint that we can have, that says that delta t can be at minimum 0.2 microseconds. Because the minimum frequency that we can measure with such a problem is 5 MHz. Therefore, delta t is included in this interval that is characterized by a lower limit equal to 0.2 microseconds and an upper limit equal to 0.8 milliseconds. What happens if we consider the error by which this measurement will be affected? Clearly, as we remember, the longest the measurement time, the best the accuracy of the measurement. Therefore, we could consider to assume that the delta t we use is 0.8 milliseconds. Be careful, in some problems, in some exams, to assume the longest duration of the measurement interval is not a good choice, because will bring us to wait a lot for obtaining the measurement. But in such a case, the value that we have fixed is clearly acceptable, because to wait 1 millisecond or less for a measurement clearly is even, let's say, more than what we need, honestly. In any case, we have to recover the expression of the relative error in this case, that is, if you remember, symmetric. In other words, the minimum relative error is equal to the maximum relative error in the measurement accuracy. Of course, one is the opposite than the other with respect to the other. And the general expression is 1 divided by the minimum frequency time delta t plus the maximum latency divided by delta t. This last, let's say, quantity, this last term, can be neglected, because the text said that the value of the latency is 1 nanosecond, and clearly dividing 1 nanosecond by 1 millisecond, more or less, gives us 10 power minus 6. Clearly, this is an error that cannot be even conceived, because is practically not present on the real error that affects the measurement. The real error that affects the measurement is, on the other hand, caused by the other term, that is 1 divided by 5 times 10 power 6 times 0.8 milliseconds. And this will provide to us a final result equal to 0.5 times 10 power minus 3, that is less than 1,000. Okay, now let's consider the other technique called hardware, you remember, into which we have two bits that characterize the architecture, the hardware architecture we built. that are sent to the parallel port, to the PIO port of the microprocessor. Looking at the slide 65 of the mentioned section, you see that we have the interrupt request bit of the timer, that is the bit considered as the trigger of the end of the measurement interval. Looking at the slide, you see that that bit, in the particular case, it was the most significant one, but this is not said in general, is connected to the enable input of the timer itself, so as to freeze the counting. Is connected to the counter of the pulses that come from the transducer, so as to stop, to block also this other counting, and moreover is connected to the interrupt request input of the microprocessor. And again, we have to consider the possibility that this is the interrupt main line of the micro or the generic input pin of a parallel port. I prefer, in this case, definitively, to consider that this pin is one of the possible pins of the parallel port of a micro, because it is not possible to conceive that such a kind of line is artificially hardware connected to the main interrupt line of a micro. Typically not possible. The other bit that makes use of the input port of input-output port of a microprocessor is the reset. You see in the architecture that both the timer and the counter are started again in their counting activity by a command that arrives from the microprocessor port, and we said that this command, this signal, is activated within the interrupt service routine. Therefore, with respect to the overall number of the bits available to the microprocessor and therefore to the port, we have to subtract, we have to eliminate a couple of bits due, indeed, to the interrupt request and the reset. Therefore, let's work as we have 14 bits. Again, similar calculations as before must be done. Therefore, looking at the constraints of the technique, we have to consider the first one, 80 MHz delta T, less than 2 power n minus 2. That is, delta T must be lower or at least equal than 0.2 times 10 power minus 3. And again, as before, the minimum frequency that we are able to measure with such an approach is the one into which one count happens, occurs, within the measurement interval. Therefore, since the minimum frequency that we want to measure is 5 MHz, we will write 5 MHz greater than 1 on delta T, looking at the second constraint that the technique must respect. And this provides us, as before, that the duration of the measurement must be at least greater than 0.2 microseconds. Again, we replace these values in the two expressions of the errors, I mean the two borders of the range that demonstrates, indicates the minimum and maximum accuracy of the measurement. And therefore, we have a minimum relative error that is given by the ratio between the clock of the timer divided by delta t plus 1 divided by the minimum frequency time delta t itself. In this quantity, again, we have to consider that the first term can be considered not influent, not important for the final calculation, because clearly TCK is the resolution of the timer, is the resolution with which we determine the duration of the measurement interval. And it is clear that the highest the ratio between the clock and the duration of delta t, the best will be the accuracy. In any case, considering that the timer could have, let's say, from 8 up to 16 or even more bits, we will have a ratio between TCK divided by delta t that can go from, let's say, 0.4 more or less time 10 power minus 2, up to when we have a lot of bits, for example 20, 1 millionth. Therefore, could be considered very, very small. Conversely, the other term is given by the ratio between 1 and the product of the minimum frequency multiplied by delta t. And we have estimated before that the most convenient delta t, as in the previous case, is the longest one. Therefore, we multiply f mean, that is 5 MHz, time 0.2 time 10 power minus 3. And this provides a quantity that can be considered very small. In fact, the minimum frequency is 5 MHz, that is 5 time 10 power 6 multiplied by, as we said before, 0.2 time 10 power minus 3. And the product of this quantity, the final, let's say, calculation, is 1 time 10 power minus 3. That is a very small error. Consider that if the timer features 8 bits, probably the ratio between TCK and delta t may be of the same order of this error. Otherwise, if the timer features more bits, for example 10, 15 or even 20, again, as we said before, the ratio between TCK and delta t will be considerably smaller than the error, relative error, that we have just now calculated. Of course, this value represents also the upper limit of the relative error, because you remember that in the case of the hardware-outer technique, the fork, the range of the accuracy is not symmetric, but in this case we assumed that the ratio between TCK and delta t is basically negligible. Therefore, we in practice decided that the range is symmetric. Therefore, the upper limit is the ratio between 1 and minimum frequency multiplied by delta t, and the calculation is the same, 1 time 10 power minus 3. Let's consider now the software technique that we have neglected till now, but belongs to the group of the techniques based on the counting of a certain number of pulses provided by the transducer or provided by a whatever source, divided by the measurement interval. Let's consider in particular the constraint that says that the duration of, let's say, the sampling routine, that is the software code that detects the commutation in the edges, in the pulses coming from the external world, and eventually count them, incrementing a suitable software variable, and establishing if the duration of the time interval, the measurement interval, has expired or not. Okay, the duration of this routine must be lower than 1 divided 2 times the maximum frequency. Considering that the maximum frequency is 80 MHz, the limit the software routine shouldn't overcome is 6 nanoseconds. Now we can ask to ourselves, is this possible? During the description of the routine, we roughly said that the number of the clock cycles that are necessary to perform those elementary operations could be considered, let's say, around 50, just to make calculations simply, around 100 clock cycles. Okay, but if the routine the overall duration of the routine is 6 nanoseconds. What is 1 clock cycle? 6 nanoseconds divided by 100. And this is a very high clock frequency that we must provide to our microprocessor. Even if the number of the clock cycles necessary for the execution of all the instructions would be 10 clock cycles instead of 100, that is impossible. But in any case, this means that the duration of the clock cycle should be 0.6 nanoseconds, that is 3-4 gigahertz. Is this possible? Is this reasonable? Of course, no. For many reasons. First of all, we are very close to frequencies that have been reached in the case of 10 clocks as a duration of the routine, but have not definitively been reached in the case the duration of the routine is 100 clocks. 100 clock cycles, I mean. Moreover, the highest the clock frequency, the highest will be the power consumption of the microprocessor that we are considering, and its, let's say, capability of disturbing other instrumentations, other devices that are present in the surrounding environment. Moreover, the electronic circuits, the electronic boards that we must provide with such a kind of microprocessor should be very, very high quality carried out. All these considerations push us towards high costs and high problems or troubles in terms of thermal insulation, dimensions, shielding, noising, noise filtering, and so on. In the embedded applications world, the issues are mainly low power consumption, low cost, low sizes. Therefore, a microprocessor characterized by this high clock frequency couldn't be taken into account, wouldn't be considered. Therefore, even this technique must be discarded. And finally, let's consider the last one that reverse, we can say, the point of view, the so-called two pulses technique. In this case, instead of counting the number of the pulses within a certain measurement interval, we determine the amount of the time that expires between one pulse and the next one. In this case, we need a good clock cycle, since we know that the slowest the amount of the clock cycle, the worst will be the accuracy. and conversely, the shortest is the clock cycle duration. Of course, the best will be the accuracy of the measurement that we are considering. The constraint of the technique that we can find in the section devoted to the digital interface at the slide 67 is 1 divided by 2 power the number of the bits that can be devoted to such a kind of measurement. And in this case, we know that the line providing the pulses is connected to the port of the microprocessor. Therefore, we must consider that 1 bit of this port is devoted to such a kind of detection. Therefore, the number of the bits that we have available is 15. And the clock cycle should be greater than 1 divided 2 power 15 times the minimum frequency. The minimum frequency is 5 MHz. Therefore, we obtain that the clock cycle should be greater than 6 times 10 power minus 12. Minus 12, consider this. The other constraint is, conversely, that the clock cycle should be lower than the fastest phenomenon that we want to measure. Otherwise, we are not able to detect it. And the fastest phenomenon that we want to measure is the phenomenon whose duration is the inverse of the highest frequency we have considered, that is 80 MHz. The corresponding time duration is 1.25 times 10 power minus 8. Therefore, the clock should be included between 6 times 10 power minus 12 and 125 microseconds. Clearly, we need to assume a realistic value, because a time in the order of 10 power minus 12 is not feasible, and on the other hand, the shortest the clock cycle, the most accurate will be the measurement. Therefore, we assume that the clock that we will use is in the order of 1 nanosecond. That is, we assume to work with 1 GHz clock frequency. The two limits in the fork, in the range that define the error of the measurement, is for the lower value, minus F, that multiplies the sum between the clock and the maximum latency, divided by 1 plus F, that multiplies the same quantity. And for the upper case, we have plus F, that multiplies TCK plus the maximum latency, divided by 1 minus F, that multiplies the same quantity. At a first sight, the two expressions seem symmetric, but this isn't. So we have to calculate both to establish what is the best choice. And the text says that we have to consider the worst case. And for such a kind of a technique, of an approach, the worst case is represented by the maximum frequency, that is, when the two pulses detected from the transducer are very close, so we have to choose a very short clock, otherwise the resolution of the measurement is not acceptable. Perfect. So let's replace in this formula F with F max, and in the first case, taking, as we said, a reasonable clock equal to 1 nanosecond, we will have that 80 times 10 power 6 multiplied by 2 times 10 power minus 9 divided by 1 plus the same quantity, 80 times 10 power 6 times 2 power 10 minus 9, we provide as a result minus 0.13, we can be more precise, 0.138. That is, taking a clock very short, of course not close to the limit but feasible, we will have an error in the order of the 14% that affects the measurement. Conversely, if we consider the other limit, that is given by the ratio between 80 times 10 power 6 times 2 power 10 minus 1 divided by 1 minus 80 10 power 6 that multiplies the sum of the two clock and the latency, that is 2 times 10 power minus 9, we will have as a result 0.19, that is the error that we will have is in the order of 20%, not acceptable. If we would have considered the measurement with the minimum frequency, the error should be in the order of plus minus 3%, and even in this case this error would be very greater with respect to the error provided by the first technique, the hardware interrupt, that at this point is the one that must be chosen. About the question related to the minimum and maximum frequencies that can be really measured with the chosen technique, we have to make reference to the constraint relative to the hardware interrupt approach that at the end of the analysis that we have shown has been considered. The first issue is related to the maximum frequency. Therefore, we divide 2 power n by 80 MHz, and we determined a suitable measurement interval as 0.8 microseconds. The real frequency that can be measured by choosing such a kind of interval is 125 MHz. Looking at the first question, the first exercise of this exam, the request is to design a digital converter based on the dual slope principle with 14 bits, considering that a clock 1 MHz is available and a reference voltage 1 volt as well. The signal that must be converted is within 0 and 10 volts, and to this issue the text requires a suitable size of a suitable estimation of the resistor and of the capacitor that characterize the circuit, so as the operational amplifier are not saturated. Finally, the text requires also to evaluate the conversion times in the two cases respectively. The second part of the exercise says that assuming the converter is inserted into a measurement chain as shown in the figure, we require to estimate in a suitable way the time necessary for iterating the polling routine in the microprocessor that is charged to activate the sample and hold phase, the modification of the gain in the operational amplifier, and the start of the conversion. Okay, for what concerns the converter, let's go to the analog section and let's consider the slides 30 and 31. Looking at the slide 30, we see that the first stage of the operational amplifier is an integrating one, into which at first the switch is set on the voltage that must be converted, and in the second phase it is changed so as the new voltage that is given to the operational amplifier is minus VR. Moreover, we know that in the first part of the conversion, the counter will count the clock pulses coming from the oscillator up to the overflow, up to the maximum possible count it can provide. Therefore, looking at the slide 31, we know that in the first case, in the first phase, that is from time zero, from time that corresponds to the start of conversion up to T0, the voltage in output to the first operational amplifier will go with a negative slope minus Vx divided by Rc. This value multiplied by T0 gives the final voltage that is reached at the end of the first step of the conversion. We know what is T0 because we know that in the first phase this is the time necessary to the counter for achieving the maximum possible count, that is 2 power n time the clock that is provided by the text of the XM, 1 MHz. 2 power n means 2 power 14, that is 16,384. 1 MHz is corresponding to 1 microsecond clock period. Therefore, in the first phase, T0 corresponds to 16,384 microseconds. That is more or less 16 milliseconds. Okay, this is the time necessary in the first case, of course, but the text asks to consider two values, two possible voltages that must be converted, 0 volt and 10 volt. But in the first case, 0 volt, clearly the conversion is immediate because we are considering a converter that is based on the charging and the discharging of a capacitor. And if the capacitor is not charged, and therefore it will be not discharged, the time that is needed to be waited is clearly very, very, very short. So let's consider the case that is more challenging for us, that is the conversion of the 10 voltage input. In this case, clearly, considering that the T0 duration of the first part of the conversion is 16 milliseconds, the problem is Vx will be 10 volts. What is the final voltage V of T0? Okay, this is given by Rc. That is, if we properly estimate the value of the time constant that is related to T0, so as V of T0, it will be a suitable ratio, a suitable multiple of Vx, we will have a good conversion. And let's say, consider the fact that at the end of T0, we will switch to a voltage that is equal to, we said, 1 volt, the so-called VR, V reference voltage. Therefore, it is possible to estimate R and C by replacing VT0 with 1 volt, VX, we said, is 10 volts, T0 has been already calculated, and this allows us to estimate R and C properly. Now, the second question is calculate the conversion time. Perfect. Now we have Rc, and we have also Vr. Therefore, we know that with that slope, Vr divided by Rc multiplied by T0, that is 2 power n times the clock, that is 16 milliseconds, we will have the remaining time necessary for arriving from a voltage of 1 volt up to 0, as the picture in slide 31 shows. Of course, in the case of 0 volt conversion, no charge, no discharge are present in the converter, but in any case the procedure by which the ADC features the complete overflow of the counter must be respected in any case, so that is the conversion time. Otherwise, if we are converting 10 volts, the conversion time will be the sum of the time necessary for bringing the counter in overflow plus the time for discharging the capacitor from 1 volt up to 0. Coming to the third part of the question that is made in the point 1 of the exam, we have to consider that clearly the overall time that is necessary to wait for switching the sampling and all the signal for selecting the right gain in the operational amplifier and then to activate the conversion in the ADC should be given by the sum of all the three components. This is the first part, we could say, of the answer. Then we can say something more. For example, looking at the picture that is shown on the text of the exam, we see that the sample and hold is made by a suitable resistor time a capacitor. Okay, we can estimate the time that this device requires before being refreshed, before requiring a refresh, that is another sampling. In fact, the off resistance provided by the switch of the sample and hold circuit will be clearly the resistance of a MOS that is not enabled, therefore we are in the order of megaohm. The capacitor typically could range from a nanofarad up to a microfarad, therefore the time that could correspond to the sample and hold activity, or let's say the constant time related to the RC circuit, could range from 1 second in the case of a capacitor very, very big, 1 microfarad, up to 1 millisecond, that is more reasonable, in the case of a smaller capacitor equal to 1 nanofarad, for example. About the operational amplifier, typically we have a very short time that could be considered immediate for the selection of the gain, but if you remember, we have to wait a few microseconds to let the signal become stable after the selection of the new gain. Therefore, also this value should be added to the constant time of the sample and hold circuit. But as you can easily observe, there are three orders of magnitude of difference between the two components. And finally, the converter. But we know that the conversion time depends on the technology on which the converter is based. Therefore, if we are considering a flash converter, we are talking about conversion times in the order of nanoseconds. Therefore, the dominant component will be the sample and hold one. If we are considering converters in the, let's say, mid-range, for example, successive approximations, we are talking about conversion times in the order of microseconds, and once more the dominant component will be given by the sample and hold circuit. Conversely, if we have a dual slope converter In this case, we know that the conversion time could reach 100 milliseconds or even 500 milliseconds. Therefore, in this case, the dominant component of the time will be given by the converter itself. And in any case, the time necessary for the polling routine for selecting the new channel to be sampled and holded and therefore amplified and converted will be given by the sum of all these components of time. Of course, since we are on board of a microprocessor, we don't respect exactly the sum. We will be wait for an interval of time that will be a little bit larger, but in any case, should consider, in any case, I repeat, the most dominant components in the activity of the devices that characterize the acquisition chain. Let's continue in our analysis of the XSUM, and let's consider the third exercise into which the request is the implementation of a filter that follows the expression that is written in the text, the next output of the filter at the kth sample is given by the kth input plus a certain coefficient that multiplies the difference between the previous output and the present input. Cf is equal to 0.75, uk represents the output, ik the input at the kth sampling time, as we have already said. And the assumption is the usage of a 16-bit microprocessor without floating-point unit. The software routine that we want to implement is the one that is shown in the slides 60 and 61 of the analog interfacing section. Therefore, the values that are given in the text of the XSUM are related to that kind of situation, let's say. Therefore, the value of UK is 35. The remainder value at the previous iteration of the algorithm was 0.1875. The present input is 30. And finally, the request is the estimation of how many sampling periods are necessary so as to have the output of the filtering that reaches the value at the input. Okay, let's consider the software routine that we have seen in during the lessons, and in particular that is very suitable for this kind of problem due to the fact that the microprocessor that we have is not provided with a floating point unit, and this means that every number, and in particular every float number as required in the problem that is assigned to us, must be represented with a suitable, let's say, management based on integer numbers. In the example that we have seen in the lesson, the coefficient that multiplied the difference between the previous output of the filter and the present input was 0.5. And this value was represented as 8000 in hexadecimal codification, because 8000 corresponds in digital numbers to 32768, that is 2 power 15. The logic, as you remember, is if the coefficient that we are considering runs from 0 to 1, and if we want to transform it into an integer representation considering integer numbers, that are coded on a 16 bits range. 0.5 is half that range. Therefore, we transformed it into the corresponding value that is located at the half of the possible values considered the 16-bit range representation, that we assumed. Now we have 0.75, and we can follow the same idea. It is not so complicated to transform 0.75 into a suitable integer representation, because we can observe that 0.75 is given by 0.5 plus 0.25. And if 0.5 corresponds to 32,000 and more, that is 2^15, to add the remaining 0.25, we have to add to the same representation as before 2^14. In other words, the new integer number that will correspond to the number that we are considering is 2^14 plus 2^15. For the remaining, the evolution of the calculation follows exactly the same steps as before. That is, you will have surely recognized the filtering that we have considered, that is an exponential filter. The expression uk equal to the input plus the coefficient that multiplies the difference between the previous output and the present input is exactly the expression of an ARMA filter, where the first coefficient is minus CF, the first coefficient of the B group is 1 minus CF, and the remaining ones are considered as 0. Therefore, if you look at the slide 59 in that block, you will have exactly the same expression, and you will see also the formula that will provide us the time that is necessary to wait for having the output that reaches the input, but we will see at the end of the exercise. We have properly transformed the coefficient into a suitable integer representation. Concerning the exercise, the other point that must be taken into account is the value of the resto variable that represents the previous part, the previous, let's say, fractional part that we have calculated in the previous iteration of the algorithm. When we solved such a kind of problem at lesson, we have considered a very easy value for resto, that was 0.25. And once more, we can represent it at, as 2^14. In this case, we have another value, a little different, but not so complicated to be represented, because you will have noticed surely that 0.1875 can be considered as the sum of 0.125. And it's half, basically. Therefore, we can represent this value as 2^13 plus 2^12. Finally, about UK and IK, they are 35 and 30. Conceptually, we have no differences with respect to what we did at lesson. In that case, UK was 25 and the present input was 20 instead. In this case, we have two different but very easy to be calculated values.
Therefore, it is possible to execute the same instructions as we made at lesson, showing that also in this case the error in terms of approximation made with such a kind of, let's say, integer representation of floating point numbers is not so high with respect to the real calculations we should have done. This said, I suggest to do by yourself the exercise, because at this point you have all the elements that you need for replacing the values that we used at lesson with the newest one, and reproducing the same execution philosophy. The final question was related to the number of sample periods after which the output would reach the value of the input. Since this is an exponential filter, we know that the time constant of this filter is t, the sampling period, divided by 1 minus the coefficient. The coefficient in this case is 0.75, therefore 1 minus 0.75 is 0.25, and the time delay for reaching the input value is 4 times the sampling period. The last question of the exam is related to the measurement level, and in particular to the issues, the troubles, and all the constraints that are related to this phase in the general acquisition of a physical magnitude provided by the transducer, describing what happens and what must be done in the microprocessor when the value provided by the acquisition chain and originally provided by the transducer must be transformed into a physical value. We remember that the problems that characterize this step of the overall measurement are related to some steps that must be considered from the point of view of the microprocessor. The first of them is the linearization. With this, we mean that the relationship between the physical magnitude that we want to acquire and the converted binary number that is provided to the microprocessor should be hopefully linear. But not always this is possible. Therefore, a linearization is done typically at analog level by using suitable electronic circuits. Of course, this kind of linearization must be remembered in the microprocessor so as to reproduce in the inverse sense the modification in the, let's say, curve that a particular electronic circuit introduced in the acquisition chain without modifying what has been really measured by the transducer. In any case, however, the linearization is necessary to exploit properly the analog to digital conversion resolution that, as we know, is characterized by a quantization error constant, and therefore more important if the values coming from the transducers are small, and less, let's say, affecting the quality of the measurement if the values coming from the transducer are high. On the other hand, we know that the quantization error affects also the values coming from the transducer if their relationship with the provided output voltage is not linear, because if the slope is particularly low in the characteristic curve that relates voltage to physical magnitude, the sensibility of the analog to digital conversion will be quite low. There will be a let's say, reduce the small number of digital outputs from the analog to digital converter that will be provided to the microprocessor. Conversely, if the slope of the characteristic is very high, in this case, the sensibility of the ADC could be considered overestimated, that is very, very high, very excessive, and we will have a lot of digital numbers in output from the digital to the analog to digital converter that will correspond to the different values coming from the transducers. In any case, the capability of transforming what is arriving from the transducer to a binary number that represents well that physical magnitude and the transform voltage will be not fair. Some values will be overestimated, and other values will be underestimated by the conversion due to the quantization error. This is the motivation that brings us to the need for a linearization of the system of the signal that arrives from the transducer if necessary. But of course, this operation is artificial and must be done in reverse when we read the values as they come from the analog to digital converter. Another, of course, level that must be managed by the microprocessor is the conversion of the ADC. But before doing the proper acquisition, it is necessary to calibrate the transducer. In fact, the sensors, as they arrive from the manufacturer and the vendor, are not always suitable for the measurement as they were, let's say, plug and play. But they can be affected, for example, by offset voltage. Therefore, there is a set of possible input values of the physical magnitude that will not provide any output from the transducer. Maybe we have a nonlinearity at the beginning and at the end of the range, so we should reduce the possible solicitations to the transducer to reach a linear interval of output values into which the evolution of the signal is linear as we want. And we described how to calibrate a signal at lesson by mentioning that it is necessary to provide to the transducer a set of known values of the physical magnitude so as to measure the output not only of the sensor but also of all the devices that characterize the acquisition chain, and therefore to reconstruct the real curve that relates the physical magnitude acquisition up to the acquisition from the microprocessor. This is necessary not only due to the fact that often devices don't respect the characteristics mentioned on the datasheet, but also because during the life of the measurement, the characteristics of the devices change, of course, and what was the real curve, the real characteristic at the beginning of the measurement is not more affordable, is not more considerable valid after, for example, 6 months of measurement. Other considerations were done about the careful calculations that must be done when the measurement we want to take is derived from a couple of other measurements. We talked about the need of careful calculation when we make a difference between two values that come from an analog to digital converter, because they will be affected by the quantization, and one can be affected in positive and maybe another one can be affected in negative by this error. Therefore, the difference will turn out in the twice the error that we could have. Moreover, we talked about the need to pay attention when we evaluate the integral function or the derivative function, but all these things were explicitly described at lesson. And finally, let's say the last step of the measurement is about the digital filtering. We talked about mobile average filtering and exponential filtering. That was the topic dealt with in the third exercise. So all these topics can be, let's say, in a summarized form described in the answer to the question number 4 of this exam. The next exercise that I want to show you is present in the exam signed on 2019, February the 6th. And in particular, this is the second exercise given, into which a 32-bit microprocessor with working frequency equal to 500 MHz must measure a pulse train frequency in the range 5 MHz, 50 MHz, with a precision that is set in the range plus minus 5%. The processor drives a H-bridge motor with a locked antiphase PWM generating a 50 Hz triangular wave and a 10 Hz ramp 1. The more accurate technique that allows the best accuracy in the measurement must be identified considering the available resources, neglect the interrupt latency. This kind of problem is very similar to the one that we have seen this morning in the previous part of the lesson, but the real core of the exercise is related to the identification of how many bits among the 32 of the microprocessor are available to us for the implementation of the typical techniques that allow us to measure the pulse trains. And in particular, the situation to which we have to pay attention is the control of the H-bridge motor and the locked phase antiphase PWM generation. You remember that the H-bridge is one of the possible controls that is allowed to manage a motor and in particular a direct current motor. And the locked PWM antiphase was specifically conceived to avoid that the motor is charged with the continuous generation of the pulses related to the MOS circuits that drive the current crossing the motor itself. Depending on the particular group of MOS that are activated by the control, the rotation of the motor should be allowed in clockwise direction or counterclockwise. It is possible to break the motors themselves, and therefore it is possible to control in a relatively intelligent manner a graceful degradation, that is a graceful slowdown of the velocity of the motor itself. Unfortunately, one of the drawbacks of this approach is that the pulses should be given by the motor itself, the microprocessor itself, and therefore we have a quite hard task that is assigned to the microprocessor, particularly if the velocity and therefore the frequency of the pulses should be kept high. An alternative solution is indeed given by the antiphase locked PWM approach, into which the microprocessor is still present, but whose, load, whose overload, we could say, is considerably reduced. These concepts are shown in the slides 90 and 91 of the digital interface block that we have seen during the lesson, and in particular the architecture that implements the locked antiphase PWM is shown in slide 91. Here we see that signal that is triangular wave shaped is generated and enters in a couple of the inputs of two operational amplifiers, while at the same time another signal that implements a ramp is given to the other remaining two inputs of the operational amplifiers, and this determines periods, intervals, I mean, into which the different MOS devices are activated, therefore, let's say, causing opposite currents crossing the motor. And this mechanism is based on the fact that the motor can be considered as a capacitor, that is, a device that answers to the average of the input signal provided to it. Therefore, the PWM approach is related to the fact, looking at the slide, that when the green curve is greater than the blue curve, that is the triangular waveform, we will have a certain, let's say, prevalence in the MOS circuits. In particular, we will have that the Q1 device will be active, while the Q4 device will be correspondingly active, and this will bring the motor to be crossed in a certain way. On the contrary, in the phase into which the blue signal is greater than the green one, the direction into which the current crosses the motor is the opposite. We know, I repeat, that the motor is sensible to the average of the signal provided, therefore the PWM is, let's say, carry out. The problem is how to carry out, how to implement this couple of signals, the triangular waveform and the green one. And the answer is related to the possibility of, carrying out a control from the microprocessor on the basis of which we generate a time base that corresponds to the period that is indicated into the text. For example, we say that the triangular wave has a period equal to 20 milliseconds, while the ramp 1 has a period equal to 14 milliseconds. This means that we need a timer with a suitable number of bits that will generate an interrupt every 20 or every 4 milliseconds. And for doing this, considering that this timer could receive the same frequency signal that is given by the microprocessor oscillator, that is 500 MHz, 2 nanoseconds, we must count a certain number that, when expired, should provide the interrupt that says this period has passed, this other period has expired. Therefore, first of all, we need an oscillator. Second, we need a prescaler, because otherwise probably we have an excessively high number to be counted, and therefore we need a very high number of bits in output to the counter. And second, we need a time base value that is provided by the microprocessor itself. The time base value will be the number that must be counted, and that